And now it's our privilege to welcome Brother Byron Keith to serve our convention. I'm sorry that we don't have better weather for you. However, it may get better this afternoon. Brother Keith has chosen for his subject this morning one that is very interesting. His subject is Ecclesiastes. What's the point, Brother Keith?
Well, thank you very much, Brother Davis, and before we begin, we'd like to bring the love of your brethren in Seattle. Sister Marge and I have been looking forward to being with you, but your brethren wanted their love sent, and they voted last Sunday and also at our Wednesday night meeting to send their love to all of you. We also want to bring love from our two boys, Jonathan and Aaron. They stayed home with their grandparents. Margie's parents have spent the last couple weeks with us, Brother and Sister Balco from Pennsylvania, Mike and Marge, and they also wanted their special love sent to all of you here. We were thankful they could be with us to watch the boys so we could come be with you this weekend. And thank you, Brother Davis, for the weather. We got off the plane yesterday. I told Margie that one thing we forgot to think about bringing was sunglasses. Especially in the winter in Seattle, sunglasses is one of the last things that come up in your daily conversation. So when we got off, we had to start squinting, but it was something we got used to quickly. We enjoyed getting used to the sunshine again. We don't get a lot of it this time of year. But the sunshine that we do have is the opportunities we have to be with the brethren. We notice that there's the Rices are here from San Diego today, and we talked to them just briefly before we began, and you mentioned that they came away from really the hot city in the United States today. The world's, and at least the nation's attention, are focused in San Diego on a football game. And yet our focus is with the brethren, to speak about the things of God. And you know, when we look at the scriptures, there are so many wonderful lessons that we get, so many admonitions, so many promises. But we'd like to speak today of a book that really needs a little more consideration, a little deeper consideration, to garner some of the blessings that really jump off of most of the page of the Bible, and that's the book of Ecclesiastes. Beginning with the second verse of the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, we read these words: "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain from all his labor under the sun?" What an uplifting beginning to Solomon's words and thoughts in this book. You know, some have viewed this book as pessimistic, as cynical, skeptical, even agnostic, and picture the author as a man who has wandered far from God. And to others, it seems almost secular because of the emphasis on human reason, experience, responsibility, and decision-making in man's life, because of the frequent or few references, rather, to God, and even the fewer references to salvation for man, and because of the preacher's first observations on this subject of life, which we read in verses 12 to 15 of the first chapter, and I'm going to read from the New English. There he says, "I, the speaker, ruled as king over Israel and Jerusalem, and in wisdom I applied my mind to study and explore all that is done under heaven. It is a sorry business that God has given men to busy themselves with. I have seen all the deeds that are done here under the sun. They are all emptiness and chasing the wind." But could it be possible that this book, which is included in the divine writings of the Bible, could it be possible that it was written by someone who was cynical, someone who was so negative, someone who had lost faith in God? Ecclesiastes is the Greek translation of the Hebrew word Kohelet, meaning one who addresses an assembly, and thus a preacher. An even better translation is teacher. Now, I know we have some teachers with us today, and we know that teachers are generally trained in their field, and we know that teachers must prepare lesson plans before they ever enter into a classroom. We also know that the teacher in Ecclesiastes is identified for us as Solomon. In the first book of this book, the first verse tells us that it's Solomon who is the teacher, the author of these words. And it's difficult to believe that Solomon would write a book worthy of inclusion in God's Holy Bible without having something positive to teach, something of value to give to us. And indeed, we believe this is true. For listen to the words from chapter 12, verses 9 and 11, again reading from New English. So the speaker, in his wisdom, continued to teach the people what he knew. He turned over many maxims in his mind and sought how best to set them out. He chose his words to give pleasure, but what he wrote was the honest truth. The sayings of the wise are sharp as goads, like nails driven home. They lead the assembled people, for they come from one shepherd. And we'd suggest that the one shepherd that is being referred to here is God himself. Well, this hardly appears to be coming from a man of doubt, a man who's wandered far from God. And so we'd like to look for the lesson plan in Ecclesiastes this morning. How did Solomon best set out the lessons relating to vanity that would somehow benefit the followers of God? And as we do so, we're going to suggest that there are six keys that will help us understand this book better. Three of them are negative, and three of them are positive. And then we'd like to consider these keys and see what lessons that we can get from them. So let's turn to Ecclesiastes. And as we consider this book, one thing we're going to notice about looking for a lesson plan in Ecclesiastes is you have to jump around the book. It's not laid out chronologically in order. And we're going to be skipping around from front to back to middle, looking for a plan that Solomon had in laying out a lesson for those he was writing to. The first key, the first of the three negative keys, is the comment that Solomon makes that all is vanity. Now, vanity, as we read the book of Ecclesiastes, turns out to be the main word, and the refrain, all is vanity, is its theme. Now, various Bibles have translated vanity as futility or emptiness, breath, nothingness, absurdity, and so on. A definition of the word is that which is futile or worthless, of no value or profit. As Solomon observed life, he tells us that he saw little that exhibited profit or accomplishment. But it's important to note that the word all, in the expression all is vanity, should not be taken to mean everything in the universe, for a number of reasons. Solomon's observations are clearly limited to what is termed under the sun, a phrase that's repeated constantly throughout the book. These are things that are observable to the human eye. The negative conclusions always grow out of these observable phenomena, as the expressions I saw, I have seen, again I saw, and so on exhibit. Also, vanity is never predicated on God, God's work, God's revelation, or man as man. And finally, specific realities are commended as positive throughout the book by Solomon in such a way as not to be considered vanity. And so the first thing we realize when we listen to the words of Solomon in this book is he's commenting on what man can accomplish on earth through his own means, what's observable by the efforts of man himself. The vanities that Solomon observed can be grouped into four categories, which we're going to list as the pursuit of wealth, the pursuit of pleasure, the pursuit of justice, and the pursuit of wisdom. We'd like to look at these four and see why they were all vanity in the sight of Solomon. First, the pursuit of wealth. Solomon spends the most time noting the vanity of this pursuit from the standpoint of working too hard, of not working hard enough, of working with the goal of obtaining great possessions, and of having great possessions. Let's turn to chapter 4 and read verses 4 through 6. And this comments on working too hard and not working hard enough. And I'm going to read again from the New English. It says, "I considered all toil and all achievement and saw that it comes from rivalry between man and man. This too is emptiness and chasing the wind. The fool folds his arms and wastes away. Better one handful and peace of mind than both fistful and toil that is chasing the wind." What he's telling us here is that neither of these two options, either working too hard or not working hard enough, brings fulfillment, because one produces envy and the other produces nothing. This is vanity. Let's turn to the second chapter, verses 17 through 23. And here we hear about the pursuit of obtaining wealth. "Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored, there shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity." It's clear that Solomon is saying it's vanity to work like a mule all your life to gather great possessions, only to leave it to a man afterwards who might be wise, or he might be foolish, to squander it away in a week or a month. What's the point? This again is vanity. Chapter 4, verse 8 speaks also about this. "There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet there is no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, it is a sore travail. If you have no one to share your labors with and your wealth with, what's the point? There's also no fulfillment here," says Solomon. How about having great possessions? We know, looking around the world today, that's the goal of our society, to have great possessions. Chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. "There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is vanity, and it is an evil disease." Prosperity is not necessarily a good thing. An accumulation of wealth does not always result in using it. Sometimes others get to use it instead. Again, what's the point? Why should we gather these large, great possessions? Turning back to the fifth chapter, verses 10 through 17, read this. He that loves silver shall not be satisfied with silver. He that loves abundance with increase, this is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to be owners thereof, save in the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept from the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. It's not the wealth, but rather the drive for wealth that is never satisfied in man. Wealth itself attracts dependence, but it can't guarantee a good night's sleep. And in the end, wealth is lost either to someone else or to death. Where's the fulfillment in wealth? And finally, in chapter 2, verses 4 to 11, tell us of Solomon's wealth. I made me great works. I built me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great, and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Think about the wealth that Solomon garnered in his lifetime. We know what a rich man he was. He had the greatest wealth in all of Jerusalem, and yet in the end, it held nothing of profit to him. If acquiring the greatest wealth of all mankind holds nothing profitable, why pursue these great possessions in the first place? What's the point? From all of these observations and experiences, Solomon concludes that the pursuit of vanity in man's lifetime is vanity. The pursuit of wealth is vanity. So we turn to the second pursuit that man might encounter, the pursuit of pleasure. Chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. Nothing new ever happens, says man. One of the pleasures of life to most people is enjoying new things. But after a lifelong time of observation, Solomon concludes that there's nothing new in life for man. So what's the point? Chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, again address this pursuit of pleasure. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? Pleasure and laughter are okay in their place, but they certainly don't provide any lasting fulfillment. They're not a pursuit of our lifetime, of man's lifetime, worth chasing after. The pleasures of this world, say Solomon, are vanity. How about the pursuit of justice? Very interesting in this country the last few years. Justice has been one of the main topics of conversation, and especially how it is not applied equally among the land. Chapter 7, verse 15. All things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongs his life in his wickedness. Isn't this just the opposite of the way it should be? If we're pursuing justice, this is just the reverse of what our pursuit should come to realize. And we've seen this many times repeated in this country in the last few years especially. Chapter 8, verse 14. There is a vanity which is done upon the earth, that there be just men unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. Again, there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. Why does this happen? Why do good men receive injustice and bad men receive justice? What's the point of being just if we end up being treated like the wicked? Chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. So I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. Wherefore I praise the dead which are already dead, more than the living which are yet alive. Yea, better is he than both they which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. The oppressed, the ones who need it most, have no comforter. And at the same time, their oppressors somehow have garnered all the power. It's not fair, says Solomon. Where's the justice in the world? Pursuing justice is also vanity. Well, certainly the pursuit of wisdom must bring some fulfillment. Chapter 1, verse 16 to 18. I commanded my own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increases sorrow. Solomon's experience told him that wisdom did not solve life's ultimate questions. It only increased his grief and his sorrow. Pursuit of wisdom was also vanity. Chapter 2, verse 12 through 17. I turn myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that comes after the king? Even that which has already been done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as far as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his hand, are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happens to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happens to the foot, so it happens even, as it happens to the fool, rather, so it happens also to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool? Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Solomon says that wisdom doesn't separate us from the fool. And ultimately, that death negates wisdom, leaving us no different than the fool. This is certainly vanity. In summary, then, Solomon concludes that all of man's earthly pursuits are worthless in the long run. And because of that, he terms them all to be vanity of vanities. Let's look at the second negative key, and that is that man is limited. Chapter 1, verse 15. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. Some things, says Solomon, just can't be changed. And that limits us as men. Chapter 6, verses 10 through 12. That which has been named already, and it is known that it is man, neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? For who knows what is good for man in this life? All the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow. For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? Clearly, Solomon sees man as too limited in knowledge to explain the problems of life. And then finally, in chapter 8, verses 6 through 8, we read that man is limited in dominion over life, and he gives us four specific examples. Because to every purpose there is time and judgment, therefore the misery of man is great upon him. For he knoweth not that which shall be. For who can tell him when it shall be? There is no man that hath power over the Spirit to retain the Spirit. Neither hath he power in the day of death, or there is no discharge in that war. Neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. Yes, man is limited in the dominion of those things which rule his life. And in summary, when it comes to controlling life, man is unable to control or change the things that affect him most. The third negative key that Solomon brings out in this book is that God is hidden. In the observable things of life, Solomon fails to see God's hand at work. Chapter 3, verses 9 through 11. What profit hath he that work in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in his heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. From the beginning to the end, we would think refers to God's plan of the ages. And according to Solomon, the teacher, This plan was hidden from him at the time. Let's turn to chapter 8 again, verse 16. When I applied mine heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done upon the earth, for also there is that neither day nor night that seeth sleepeth with his eyes, then I beheld all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun, because though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. Yea, further, though a wise man think to know it, yet shall he not be able to find it. For all this is considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. No man knoweth either love or hatred by all that is before them. All things come alike to all. There is one event to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean and to the unclean, to him that sacrifices and to him that sacrifices not. As is the good, so is the sinner. And he that sweareth as he that feareth an oath. There is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart while they live, and after that they go to the dead. For to him that is joined to all the living there is hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything. Neither have they any more a reward. For the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished. Neither have they any more a portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. Solomon could not find an answer to the questions of life. So he tried to understand God. Not only could he not understand God, he observes that all events happen equally to all those under the sun. And he observes further that the righteous and the wicked end up with the same result. He couldn't find this out in his own wisdom, and when he turned to understand God again, he could not find an answer. Chapter 11, verse 1. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven, and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there shall it be. He that observeth the wind shall not know, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. This term, thou knowest not, seems to summarize man's lot in life as he looks towards his own fulfillment, especially when it comes to knowing the works of God. And so these three negatives are so overwhelming that they appear to be nearly impossible to overcome. But as we mentioned at the beginning of our remarks, the teacher did not intend to leave us with this thought. And so we turn to the three positive keys that he brings out. How can man enjoy life? Where's the fulfillment in life? The first key that Solomon gives us is to enjoy life. Enjoy life. Chapter 2, verse 24. There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or else who can hasten hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight, wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that which is good before God. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit, to give to those latter ones. And now turn to the third chapter, verses 12 and 13. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, it is the gift of God. See how this stands in contrast to these negatives. Now we're hearing about the gift of God. Skipping down to verse 22, where I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him. Enjoy the portion that you have, Solomon is saying. This is the gift of God. Chapter 5, verse 18. Behold that which I have seen. It is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he hath taken under the sun, all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God has given riches and wealth and has given him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answer him in the joy of his heart. Again, we see Solomon telling us to enjoy the portion of enjoyments of life, because this is the gift of God. Chapter 8, verse 15. Then I commended mirth. Remember before he put mirth down. But now he says, I commend mirth. Because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry. For that shall abide with him of his labor in the days of his life, which God giveth him under the sun. Again, in its place, it's a gift from God. Chapter 9, verse 7. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with thy wife, whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun all the days of thy vanity. For that is thy portion in this life, and in thy labor which thou takest under the sun. Whatsoever thy hand findest to do, do it with might. For there is no work, nor device, nor wisdom, nor knowledge in the grave whither thou goest. The gift of God is to enjoy your portion of life, says Solomon. One of the positives of life seems to be to not take it so seriously, is what Solomon is saying. Knowing the negatives of our own goals and pursuits, Solomon says that the simple things of life are the gifts of God, and we should enjoy them. This thankfulness for what God has given us should bring us happiness. There was a show on television the other night on 2020. And I saw just about 2 minutes of it is all. But they were talking about what is happiness. And just in the portion I saw, they spoke to an older gentleman who was very wealthy, very prominent, and they asked him, are you happy? Have you had a happy life? And his answer was, well, I suppose I am. Then they talked to a man in a wheelchair who had been an invalid for the past 10 years. And they asked him the same question. Are you happy? And a big smile came over his face. He said, yes, I am. And it turns out he was spending his life actively helping others, talking to others, lifting others up from their predicaments in life. He was using the portion that God had given him to enjoy his lot in life. And this is what Solomon finds is one of the keys to life. Enjoy that portion which is good, that portion which God has given to us. A second positive key, use wisdom properly. Now, our time is getting short, so we're going to just mention these scriptures. Chapter 9, verses 11 to 18. Chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, and chapter 12, verses 1 through 7. And seeing the fourth chapter is the shortest, let's read that. Chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. And this is just one aspect of using wisdom properly. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward in their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falls, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? This is wisdom properly used, to share with one another, to help one another. And we have the admonitions to not forsake the gathering ourselves together, because it urges us onward. Use wisdom properly. And the third key is to fear God. Chapter 3, verse 14. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him. Everything that God does should bring reverence to him. We need to recognize the good things, Solomon is saying, that God does for us. Chapter 8, verses 11 to 13, and chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, also tell us that we should fear God. Solomon shows us finally his ultimate confidence in God, despite all the vanities of life, that we should always come back to the reverence of the Heavenly Father. So what have we learned from Ecclesiastes? What lessons can we bring to ourselves? We would hope that this book is going to be something that can lift us up. First of all, we see that all is not vanity. Earthly pursuits are not to be part of our lives. Elsewise, we may have gone to San Diego today instead of the Rices coming here to be among man and their big party in San Diego. And we know that Solomon wrote before the Master came. He wrote at a time when earthly pursuits were the only things they had to look forward to. But this is not our case. Matthew 6. Verses 19 through 21. Familiar verse to Bible students as we look to what is the pursuit in our life, what is important in our life, what keeps our life from being vanity. Lay not up treasures for yourselves upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through to steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. All is not vanity, because we now have a pursuit of a heavenly reward, something Solomon couldn't see. A second lesson is that we're no longer limited, as man was limited in Solomon's life. And God is no longer hidden, thanks to the Holy Spirit. 1 Corinthians, the second chapter, verses 7 through 10. Again, familiar words that are encouraging to us in our life. We speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew. And apparently Solomon didn't know it either. But now we know it. For had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yea, the deep things of God. Yes, friends, we're not limited anymore. We can see into the future. We can see into God's plans, thanks to the gift of the Holy Spirit. As Solomon noticed that the oppressed were not provided with a comforter, how truly thankful that we have a comforter, the Holy Spirit, to open our eyes to understanding. we too should enjoy the simple pleasures of life. Matthew 6:25-34 speak about this. Yesterday we had the pleasure of being with Brother Ed and Brother Jackie, and just in the simple pleasures of touring and enjoying each other's friendship, that was a wonderful thing. And we appreciate especially the simple pleasures of fellowship with our brethren. We should use wisdom properly and fear God. Romans 12:1-3, again, verses very familiar to Bible students, to transform ourselves. Transform our minds, because it's our rightful duty. It's our reasonable service to lay our lives down to follow in Jesus' footsteps. And finally, knowing the worthlessness of man's own devices and pursuits, Ecclesiastes' message should prepare us to accept the hope-filled and life-affirming promises of Jesus, who said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly."